Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second edition of the CBI's podcast series on international trade, exporting, and investment opportunities for British businesses in Latin America. My name is John Bleed, and I work as a senior policy advisor in the CBI's international trade team and am based in Washington, D.C. Our Washington office primarily covers the U.S. market, but also has responsibility for Canada, Mexico, and the entirety of Latin America. This podcast series is designed to reflect the enormous potential that we think CBI members stand to gain across the multitude of markets in Latin America. I'm joined today by colleagues of mine who represent three of these Latin American governments, Brazil, Colombia, and Uruguay, to have a discussion on agribusiness and sustainability and where UK businesses can learn about opportunities for investment in this sector. Latin America has the potential to become a major player in this arena. The region has nearly 23% of the world's forest cover, 31% of the planet's fresh water, and 50% of the world's biodiversity. It also produces 14% of the world's foodstuffs and 23% of all the world's agricultural and fishing exports. So the region is extremely well placed to provide sufficient food sources from healthy supply chains that increase the resilience of farmers and help conserve natural capital for future generations. And these economies are significantly focused on moving towards sustainable, low-emission agriculture policy that is resilient to climate change, achieves their sustainable development goals, and complies with the Paris Agreement. So I'm joined today by three colleagues and experts. Representing Brazil, we have Emily Reese, a senior fellow at the European Center for International Political Economy, Diego Paise, the International Affairs Director of the Uruguayan Rural Association.
And finally, representing Colombia, we have Felipe Guerrero, Senior Vice President at Dabon.
So I'm going to start with Emily real quick. And you noted that earlier in our discussions that Brazil is one of the most biodiverse countries in the world, very large producer and exporter of food products, a vast country, almost twice as big as the European Union. But yet it only uses 3 out of every 10 hectares for agricultural use, which is very low compared to countries like Ireland and the UK. Its remarkable performance as an international market player is a result of kind of really good private sector efficiency and also initiatives from the federal government. So my first question is, are there specific sustainable and innovation aspects of Brazilian agriculture that you consider worth mentioning?
Thank you so much, John. And it's a pleasure really to join you for this conversation. As you mentioned, Brazil is such a biodiverse country. And we're talking about 66% of the whole territory of Brazil is still native vegetation. I think to your point on the question of sort of innovation and technology and everything that's happening in the field, there is so much happening. The president of the COP26, Alok Sharma, visited Brazil this August. I think he was kind of impressed at sort of how agri-tech and low agri-tech has been developing to increase not only productivity, but also the sustainability of Brazilian farming. And it's quite relevant because I think that here in Europe, perhaps the tech side hasn't caught up. And so when you see this revolution in agri-tech as it's happening in Latin America, but particularly in Brazil, it always is quite stunning to visitors. So if you'll allow me just to really go quickly into why I would think that Alok Sharma was so impressed by what he observed in Brazil. Firstly, I mean, according to the Agricultural Research Agency of Brazil, Embrapa, 84% of agricultural producers use at least one digital technology in their production processes today. And that basically has meant that we have had, we've got 1.5 million rural producers in Brazil that now access data digitally, a number that has grown 1,900% in only 10 years. It's just to go to give an idea of how fast this transition is happening. I could obviously go into a lot of detail in terms of the innovations, but allow me just to mention a couple of examples. One, we're seeing a lot of local and remote sensing. And this is basically a possibility then to have better monitoring of crops and livestock, to increase productivity, to assess health status or pest statuses, but also to better integrate agro ecosystems. It's also used by public authorities in Brazil. this same remote sensing to ensure compliance with protection of the environment and protection of forests in particular, because Brazilian authorities can actually verify compliance with the Forest Code, which is the big law on the protection of the environment in Brazil. And particularly, they can go and zoom in using these multi-spectrum micro satellites into every private property of Brazil to check whether there is a compliance with the law. And it's important because if they're not in compliance, landowners in Brazil simply don't have access to banking systems or can't apply for a credit, which they need, obviously, in order to innovate further. Other really interesting innovations are blockchain technology, particularly all that means in terms of traceability of food supply systems. One example is EcoTrace. So these guys basically give you a QR code on your mango, and you can see the producer of that mango, but also the specific location where that mango was produced. Maybe even the woman in the packing house that prepared that mango ready for export. We have data analytics, also a lot of artificial intelligence. That's really the new, I would say, innovation that's coming to the fields in Brazil today. And it's really important, particularly when we're looking at the impacts of climate change on ecosystems, which is why Alok Sharma, I think, was probably so surprised to see so much innovation. We know that climate change is going to provoke perhaps more pests, more diseases around the world as we start, as climates start moving, and they have an impact on agriculture. So artificial intelligence allows us in a way to anticipate by monitoring all of these developments in the field, but also making sure that in the application of inputs, that we're being as precise as possible. And that's obviously to bring as much, I would say, sustainability, environmental protection in the production process. Finally, last but not least, I mean, robotics and drone technology are taking off, as you can imagine. You mentioned it yourself, Brazil, a gigantic country, a continentally sized country. And so drone technology is providing data that allow farmers to take better decisions on when to harvest. Also, again, apply plant protection much more surgically, and even reduce risk to workers. So these are just a couple of examples, but it is really an agri-tech revolution that we're seeing in Brazil.
It's absolutely fascinating, Emily. Thank you. And particularly kind of on the AI front, I think, you know, in the UK and especially in the US, we think of AI as a specific kind of tech-only innovation, something that's going to be further off into the future, but isn't here yet. But it's absolutely here, and it's absolutely even impacting our farming sectors as well. So I think my next question would be kind of more so on the sustainability side of things. You know, obviously, massive agricultural export market in Brazil. There are obviously consumers who have voiced concerns about environmental issues, environmental protection issues, especially in respect to the Amazon. So how is the Brazilian, you know, fruit and ag industry sustainable, and what are some ways that we can address those concerns?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's one that we often hear around here in Europe. And I know it's difficult to imagine just how big Brazil is, but to give you an idea, 95% of the mango and grapes that are produced in Brazil all come from a region which are over 1,000 kilometers from the Amazon. It's just to give you an idea of how far we are. And that's also for logistical reasons. You don't want to be that far from a port, and the Amazon is kind of on the other side of the country. So that's just to put it into sort of a bigger setting. I mean, as you know, Brazil is the third largest fruit producer in the world. And it has countless varieties that will, some that we'll find in Europe, for instance, apples, which are grown more in the south of Brazil, where you have more temperate climates. And then the tropical fruits such as limes, mangoes, and bananas, which will tend to be grown in the northeast of Brazil, as with melons. There's also some Amazonian fruits. And so as much as I would say the bigger production occurs very far from the Amazon, more on the coast of the northeast of Brazil, there is some really interesting fruit production happening in the Amazon. And that's very important in terms of the environmental protection and being able to bring communities into, I would say, sustaining the protection of forests, bring them to be part of the act as actors, as guardians of the forest. And a very simple example of that is the acai berry. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's that superfruit, you know, it's got this very unique nutritional profile, which has been soaring in terms of interest with health conscious consumers around the world. It's used in juices, it's used in smoothies, shampoos, and the famous acai bowl. And the acai actually is produced naturally, I would say, in the Amazon. It's sort of a byproduct of a healthy tropical forest. Yeah. Only a tiny fraction of acai today is actually from planted acai plants, meaning that the rest has been picked in the Amazon forest and is also naturally organic, right? So it's a really interesting way of the integration of the protection of the forest, but also how you bring communities in being part of a value chain that can provide also a vital income to an area which tends to be the poorest part of Brazil. So it's really this integration which is very useful. One of the largest acai producers in the world is a company called Petrus Fruity Group. And they harvest around 18,000 tons of acai per year. And what's really interesting is that you'll see that the way that they've done this has been by working very closely with the communities. So these are riverside communities, but also indigenous communities in the Amazon. And they do this providing a number of, I would say, social sustainability instruments, such as bringing medical care, dental care down the rivers, but also they provide vocational courses. And this is really important when you're that far away from a city or even a small town, being able to access courses on how to use IT or being able to engage in arts and music. All of these things are quite valuable to those communities. So that's just one example of what can be done within the Amazon. Now, once again, keeping in mind that most of the fruit does not come from that region. It really does come from the other extremes of Brazil and other biomes, which are perhaps less sensitive.
Yeah, thank you so much for that overview. Really, really impressive and informative for sure. I guess maybe my final question for you would be kind of to take that and kind of narrow it down a little bit. So, you know, measures that Brazilian fruit producers and ag producers more generally, you know, what are they doing as an individual business to achieve kind of highest levels of sustainability and innovation kind of on a business to business level?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to distinguish two things here. One, which is the domestic producers and then the exporters, right? So if you'll allow me to just concentrate on the fruit that will end up in people's plates and in the United Kingdom, those producers all have social and environmental certification. They will have, which are independently audited, right? So they'll be certified by labels such as the Rainforest Alliance, SMETA, Fairtrade, Global Gap. But they'll also generally be working with some of the biggest supermarkets, such as Asda, Tesco, and M&S, under their own certification systems. So the amount of auditing these guys undergo means that there's very little that is taken for granted. And we're looking at sustainability here really under different angles. We're looking at it from an economic angle, as we saw in the case of acai, social sustainability and the environmental sustainability. I think we mentioned in a way how the environmental and the carbon efficiency aspect, the environmental element really is being driven by innovation and technology and this sort of agri-tech revolution that's happening in Brazil. And that really is allowing us to do very simple things. If you look at the producers down there, very small uses of water. So any irrigation now is so high tech, I would say that you get to have optimal water uses. That is important. It's also about a big push in terms of resource efficiency. And that's also about what are we doing to replace chemical fertilizers and pesticides with much more organic and ecological options. And this can go into using sort of biological products, which is, for instance, going into the DNA of the soil, using bacteria and fungi instead of chemical pesticides. This is innovation. It's innovation that's happening every day in Brazil that is driving this big sustainability push from an environmental point of view to promote soil health, because we know that that really is the basis of it all. And then I would also add in the social sustainability element, actually what is less known is that Brazil does have pretty strong labor laws and that are very strongly enforced when you're coming to the fruit producers. So for instance, you've got a 13-month salary, there's a number of requirements in terms of pensions and all the rest that are very much enforced in this sector. And I think that there's something to keep in mind here is that the fruit sector in Brazil tends to be a very feminine sector. Most of the employees in this sector are women. And by promoting a lot of the educational tools, promoting sort of this continuous learning as part of, you know, employment, you're actually providing women with an opportunity not only to bring, I would say, a salary home, but also to promote the education of much wider communities by including this inclusivity of having women very much a strength and a pillar of fruit production in Brazil.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And I think more broadly, enhancing kind of the UK-Brazilian and trade and investment relationship is a priority for the CBI long term. We have a partnership with the CNI, the Confederation of National Industry, and really think this is a sector in which that I think that we should be paying more attention to. So thank you very much for your detailed discussions. And I know that our members will appreciate it. I'm going to turn the discussion to Uruguay. To bring in Diego Paise, who's the International Affairs Director of the Uruguayan Rural Association. Now, regarding Uruguay, even though it only has a population of 3.5 million people, the country produces food for over 28 million people, meaning that it has really great potential to increase the production of agro-industrial goods for the entire world. So they have significant comparative advantages in food production at the international level, really due to its safe production processes and its strict sanitary controls. In particular, the Uruguayan cattle industry has a traceability system that allows you to know all the information of a product from the animal's birth all the way until it reaches the final consumer. So I'm sure he can talk a little bit about that at some point. And that system is replicated in other sectors like poultry, honey, and citrus. So I guess my first question for you, Diego, would be, can you talk briefly about the potential of sustainable agriculture in the international economy more broadly, and then for Uruguay specifically, and how they stand out?
Sorry for that. Do you hear me now?
Yes, And when we can edit this. This is okay.
Well, first of all, I apologize for my English. My mother tongue is Spanish. I don't speak English very currently. I'm a bit stuck with the English, so I'm going to try to do my best. First of all, I would like to say that Uruguay is a quite small country compared to Brazil and Colombia, but we are not so small compared with European countries. We more or less, our surface is about the whole of Britain, and we just have 3.5 million people living here compared to the 60 million people living in Britain. So that's a very important point. And we have about 4 to 5 heads of cattle per person in Uruguay. That gives you the amount of importance of in terms, comparative terms with other countries in the world, of beef production related to the population in Uruguay. I would like to highlight the point that Uruguay has been analyzing the cropping potential since the 60s and 70s of last century. Especially we have a special experiment near Colonia, near the border with Argentina, who was started in 1965, and we've been analyzing the importance of rotation of crop with pastures for the last 60 or 70 years. And so we have a lot of information how to manage our soils in order to keep the productivity for a long period of time. That's quite important in terms of land use. At the same time, we've got the mapping of all our soils for more than 50 years, and we have a very detailed description of our soils, the potential of our soils in every part of the country. And we've been digitalizing that in the last 20 years. So you can get through internet into all information about the soils in every single part of the country. That's quite important in order to manage in a proper way our resources. At the same time, you refer to the traceability system in the livestock sector. I've been the responsible for developing it in the early 2003. We started with a trial of how to do it. And in 2006 and 2011, we expanded the whole system to the whole of the country. So every single cow in Uruguay has a electronic device in order to be able to have all the information about where they've been born, if they are male or female, and many other characteristics that are very important for livestock production. I think that's really very important to stress, and also that we know that it's very important for us to have good qualities of our products, because more than 70% of our production goes to the export market. So we are very keen on having all the information available in order to give to all our the different countries that demand our products to have all the information required in order to know that our product is quite safe, it's really very, very well produced, and has no problems in terms of animal health or plant health in general.
And it's a significant priority for kind of British citizens as well. So it's very important to have that discussion. I think my second question would be, could you talk more about the specific investment opportunities in Uruguay and maybe some specific areas that require foreign investment projects at the moment?
Yes, I would say that agriculture in general has two very important risks. Market risks, international market is not really very constant, and it changed a lot from one year to the other. And also our climate is not very stable. We've got a lot of drought seasons, sometimes every 7, 8, or 10 years. And so I would say that there are lots of opportunities in order to help us to manage risks in terms of market risks and domestic and climate risks. We've done some of that work, but I would think that there's plenty of potential for foreign investors to get into those two issues in agriculture in Uruguay. I would say that we have a lot of potential also in terms of improving our genetics, genetic development of either our animals, beef and sheep mainly, and also in terms of our cropping. Uruguay has a quite important surface under cropping. Lately, we started growing more and more soya bean in the last 20 years. And nowadays we've got about 1 million and a half hectares of soya beans. So there's a lot of potential in order to increase the genetic possibilities of our major crops and also genetic possibilities of major breeds, of animal breeds in Uruguay. And the third, I would like to say also that we lack a lot of infrastructure in Uruguay. Either, in spite of being a small country, we need a lot of investment in infrastructure, mainly in the secondary and roads near farming sector. And also, we lack a lot of infrastructure of development infrastructure and for irrigation in order to diminish the risk of climate change in Uruguay. I would say that those three would be the three most important issues in order to consider possibilities of investment in Uruguay.
Fantastic. Yeah, thank you. And I guess for my final question for you, Diego, would be looking ahead, what are the plans ahead for this sector? And what do you think are the major challenges facing the economy in Uruguay specifically? But I guess you could talk about the international market as well.
Well, our main concern nowadays is to have the best possibilities of getting into all the markets in the world. So, and market access is a priority in general. We would like to stress that Uruguay supports all the current groups trying to develop the more open market for agriculture in the world. So I would say that in the near future, it would be very important for Uruguay to have better market access and less problems sometimes in some parts of the world that we have to pay very high tariffs in order to get our products. That's really very, very important. I would say in terms of production, I would say our most important concern is to try to develop better seeds for crop production and better animal capacities in order to be more efficient in terms of beef production. Mainly, that's one of the most important productions in Uruguay. Also, in terms of domestic, we got some problems in Uruguay in terms of sometimes we are not so competitive because of internal policies. So I would like to stress that Uruguay is trying to improve the inflation management because sometimes we are very dependent on the export markets. And so internal policies sometimes affect the competitiveness and productivity of our agricultural sector. So I would say that would be quite important in order for Uruguay to improve the way we can have better kind of competitiveness for the agricultural production in general.
No, it makes a lot of sense. And I think you mentioned tariffs and market access, and as a British group based in the United States, or our team based in the United States, we know a thing or two about tariffs. So it's very much a problem and a challenge, I think, wherever sector you are and wherever you are located. So I'm going to turn now, finally, I guess, to Colombia and our discussion with Felipe Guerrero, who is the executive vice president of Dabon. Very interesting overview here that, you know, we were able to be provided earlier. You know, Colombia, fifth largest economy country by size in Latin America, but only about 8 million out of the 40 million hectares of agricultural land have been cultivated. So clearly some huge potential for foreign investment in this sector. It's an industry that's crucial to the Colombian economy. You mentioned one out of every five jobs, 22% of the national employment is in agro-industry. And to top it off, the Colombian government has developed a series of tax incentives to promote productive agro-industrial investment in the country from foreign firms. So I'd love to hear a little bit about this. You know, with the potential for it to become an agricultural power, what specific characteristics make Colombia stand out, and why do you think international buyers, like, you know, in British businesses, should choose Colombian products?
John, thank you very much. And it's an honor to be here with Emily and Diego, which are representing two amazing countries in Latin America as well. I've learned so much in what they've exposed that they're doing in their countries. And as you just said, Colombia is there to generate agriculture that is safe, that is away from risks associated to agricultural supply chain, that has enough land to grow without opening any agricultural borders, without going into forests, without bringing deforestation. It has enough people in order to people that know about agriculture, that have lived in agriculture, and that it can work not only in one, but many types of agriculture in Colombia. We have enough water, enough land in order to do so. And this is where Colombia has been recognized for the past 5 years as a place where you can grow without any associated risks to what climate change and any other human rights abuses, land grabbing is there for countries and companies are avoiding. And of course, want to mitigate and want to control, but also a country that has a lot of transparency and a lot of traceability is well known for its traceability practices as well. So I think that we have connected from a very early stage, and due to our history in terms of our country, we have connected very well with the consumer on what the consumer is looking for in a product. And this is in line, of course, with what the countries want. And we have the capability to provide it. I think that it's already happening in Colombia. A lot of businesses are coming back and are coming and generating that space because that we've seen that we have a consistent logistic, that we have a consistent supply, that not only can we do conventional agriculture, but we can also do organic agriculture, that we have free trade agreements with most of the countries in the world, that we are very robust in our policy and law, and that makes it easier for certification bodies, for third-party auditors, for countries to come in and understand how are we doing agriculture? How are we moving the country towards an agriculture that is safe for the consumer, safe for the country, but makes us grow in all senses?
Yeah, no, fascinating, especially kind of on that balance between ensuring that growth and protection measures are on the same wavelength and on the same path. Moving towards your group specifically, Dabon is a leader in the production of organic ingredients in South America. And in the UK, it's regarded really as a model of sustainability more broadly. Can you share a little bit with us about how your organization approaches sustainability and the potential that you see in Colombia more broadly to become a supplier for these kind of sustainable products?
Yes, of course. When I say that we can do this, is because, like you said, we have been modeling our company in order to do so. I mean, we bring whatever concerns we have on the market, and we try to mitigate them and to control them in the land on the agriculture sector. We have been including circular economy, greenhouse gas emissions, social and human responsibility, environmental protection, and overall a lot of accountability in order for people to understand what we're doing as a company and how can it be replicated in a country. We have been working very hard on circular economy, for example, generating our own energy, generating our own composting in a very big sense, how to change from diesel to natural gas to methane from biomethane. I mean, we have been working a lot in this direction, and that can be very feasible, and it's being done currently by us. We are one of the largest if not the largest organic palm oil producer in the world. And as a very controversial commodity, we have been able to show the world that it's a commodity, or it's a product that can be that can be planted in a way that is respectful of all aspects of agriculture, respectful of all aspects of human-related issues, and that can be brought safely into any country. And this includes all of the certifications available: RSPO, Rainforest Alliance, Fair Trade. I mean, it's a place where we can that we can feel comfortable of sourcing, and that people can feel comfortable of saying where it's coming from, because they know where it's coming from. And within the supply chain, everyone is identified as an identity preserved status. And that generates transparency and communication to the end client.
Wonderful, thank you. I'm going to flip the script a little bit and talk about kind of inward investment into the UK for my final question. You know, your organization has experience with this and can really be used as a reference point for kind of foreign direct investment in the agribusiness space. So as a company with operations in both Colombia and the UK, how has your experience been investing in the UK? And what would you say to British companies willing to look back across the Atlantic for Colombia in the agribusiness space? And more broadly, yeah, how can both sides be competitive long term?
No, we found that this investment in a soap bar company 2 years ago has brought to Dabon a major increase in innovation. I mean, we've and research. This is something that we need, and that the UK is leader on. So making that investment in the UK in this soap bar company has brought so much information back to our country that we are now making a better product. We're now a better company because of what we're learning and that we have from that company. So from a Colombian company perspective, this is something very important. If we want to be leaders of the sector, if we want to keep at the forefront of innovation and research, this is where we want to be. We want to be there with the universities. We want to be there with the UK government, making this information available for the industry. So as a company, we've received such a very good assistance. I mean, the government in Colombia, the UK government in Colombia, have made it so easy for us to travel, to communicate, to understand the context. It has been an amazing journey that we are now trying to see how much more can we invest in the UK, because we have understood where the positive sides of it and the growth of our country, the growth of our company. Now, from the UK back, we've also heard this conversation. I think being a fully Colombian company in Scotland has made it very easy for us to companies to come to us and ask, how is this possible? And to understand the stability of the country, the stability of our currency, the stability of our law, of our government, and that makes it easier for us to try to translate how important it is for the UK also to invest in Colombia and to bring products or raw ingredients into the UK and to build together within the two countries. It has been an amazing journey. We are very happy that we are partnering with the UK, and that we have that as a country and as a company, we've had a very good opening in the UK government and the UK people as well.
Well, that's absolutely thrilling to hear. And I almost hate to stop the conversation there because it would really kind of bring up a whole new conversation about how can we leverage kind of the UK economy's strengths to connect them to international investors, if it's education, if it's skills, if it's geographic location. These are all things that we're looking at as an organization to level up the UK economy as we recover from the pandemic and really transform it, internationalize it. And able to take growth opportunities really to areas of the country that they haven't experienced them before. So absolutely fascinating discussion. I'm going to conclude here by just thanking all the participants on this podcast for a really, really informative podcast series. If you have questions on anything regarding to the things discussed here in agribusiness, sustainable agriculture, UK, Latin American investment ties, or if you're interested more in following up with either of these people, please contact the CBI's international trade team, and we will be sure to put you in touch with the right people. So thank you very much, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.